G'day and welcome to the Farms Advice podcast, where we talk everything agribusiness to help you out on your farm. Now, this is a follow-on for the Harvest series, but over the weekend, we celebrated rural women and all of their impact and how far Australian agriculture has really come. Rural women are really having an impact on Australian agriculture and are directing it, as you can see from the CEO, the leaders, innovators and entrepreneurs that we had on the show previously. So thank you for the kind women for coming on and giving us a bit of their time to see what their resilience was in the wake of COVID-19 with the Farmers to Founders panel, and also the rise of rural women on farm and in office with Lee and Justina from the Biofields team over in WA. But let's crack on with the Harvest series for the Farms Advice podcast. We've had 3 episodes so far and they've had a really good reception, which is good. Hopefully there's a few farmers out there and workers listening to them as they get on with their own harvest up north so far. But for this episode, we'll be jumping into agronomy with a mate from uni who's done pretty well out in the paddock, of his own paddocks, but also for his clients as he's moved in to a private agronomy, helping out those clients get the best yield for their crops with the given environment that we've had a few rough years currently over in the mid-north of New South Wales. So let's get cracking into this episode. Today, for the second time, we have Richard Avendado. Sorry, mate, I deleted it last time, but I'm sure this is recording. I'll just check now. Yep, good to go. How's things?
Very good, thanks, mate. Good to be back on. Finally going to air after recording twice.
Absolutely.
Got cut. Time for a shit interview.
It's measured twice, cut once, but I cut twice and measured once only for that. But good to have you on the show, and it's probably even better to have you on the Harvest series for the podcast itself. It's a huge moment for Australian farmers. It's a bit like the grand final for farmers getting off their crops, especially for those broadacre cropping guys that aren't mixed enterprise, like yourself and ourselves. We got livestock as well. So it's a big time, both within horticulture and grains. But for this episode, we'll focus on the grain side of it. For yourself, can you just give us a bit of a spiel about your personal story and your connection to agriculture?
Yeah, so I grew up on a farm west of Boggabri. Oldest of 3 boys. We're involved in agriculture in some way or another, all 3 of us. So we mainly, growing up, it was started as a smaller enterprise, and just majority of the last 30 years has just been building up a bit of an Angus herd, tried a few breeds, got there, and always a bit of cultivation on the side. And it was originally, a lot of it was just forage. And then we've kind of been diversifying the operation the last, getting close to the 10 years now. So we do have not a big cropping program, but it'll be about 1,400 hectare cropping program, run about 1,000 breeders. Take the progeny out of the feedlot weight. We used to run a few more, but diversification's kind of limited that a little bit. So I went to uni in Armidale, where I met you, and then worked in Moree district for a number of years, originally working on a big cotton property west of Moree named Keitar, and then working for McGregor's as an agronomist. And started working for myself about 4 years ago now. Kind of back involved in the family farm, do a bit of share farming myself, and good mix of different roles, but certainly been involved in ag for quite a while, and love it every day.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's a great start. Yeah, we both met each other at UNE, and a few UNE alumni have been on the show. So fantastic to have you on here. Why did you feel the need to go out on your own to run your own agronomy?
I don't know if it's feel the need. It was just more I wanted to. I mean, yep. Everyone wants to be their own boss. And I kind of, wanted to move back into the Boggabri Gunnedah area. I was living in Moree at the time. And I don't know, I felt like I had enough of a client base, not massive one, but it could pick up more work. And, you know, do a bit of work on the farm as well. So I don't know, I was probably a little bit younger and just thought it was a good idea. Maybe didn't quite know what I was in for, especially with a pretty serious drought that kicked off just after doing it. But I don't know, it was just, I felt that I had more to offer farmers if I work for myself too. I've enjoyed it. It's been challenging, but I wouldn't say that I felt like I needed to. It was more of a, you know, desire to go into the self-employed thing and, you know, forge your own path kind of thing.
Yeah, and you can sort of work it in with your home family farm there to, like, work it in with that enterprise, you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, a lot of my guys now, I live in Gunnedah, but a lot of them are geographically spread within an hour's drive in any direction of here. Quite a few in our family farms area as well. But a lot of my guys and girls are all starting to push in a similar direction. And it works in well. Like, I could do 3 days agronomy, 3 days on the farm, or 1 day agronomy, 5 on the farm, or 4 on the farm. It doesn't matter. Like, always busy, but I like the diversity it offers too. I find that quite enjoyable.
Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't be able to run this podcast if I didn't have the flexibility that agriculture provides, and sheep don't need 100% of your time. So that works in pretty good for the podcast. So life as an agronomist, what's your day look like? Let's look at it like from the harvest sort of point of view, ramping up from planting time or even before that. How's your day look and how's it run when you're talking with your growers out there, even your old man?
So, I mean, like this time of year, a lot of the agronomy input's done apart from harvest decisions like desiccation, and, you know, we've got through a lot of the in-crop stuff and now we're just trying to get the timing of those kind of operations right. Like I said, we're only 2 weeks away from harvest, so most things have started to turn. But, you know, throughout the year, it's kind of having a good relationship with your growers, and, you know, most of them have been farming far longer than I have. So, you know, there's a certain degree of self-sufficiency there. But, it's just like, you know, getting eyes on crops is a big thing and continuing to talk to them and make sure everything's tracking well and try and be proactive, I guess. So always out in the paddock or talking to them, making sure, like, before an issue becomes a problem, like, you're dealing with it. And, making plans throughout the season too. So, you know, it's just a handy thing to kind of have a bit of a plan in front of you to work towards or work with. So, yeah, like, I'd be out in the paddock with them or scouting around by myself sometimes. It all depends, and they're all pretty busy blokes too. So it all varies throughout the year, but, yeah, you try and spend as much time in a paddock as you can.
Yep. So when you are checking on the crops, a bit of advice from myself, how often should you check on your crops?
Depends on the time of year, really. Like, when you're getting that planting window, like, you want to be in the paddock every week, no doubt. And then, like, it can ramp up, you know, with things like chickpeas and canola or faba beans in winter crop, say, like, when you're getting that peak flowering time, like, we've probably come out of now, but what was that, like, start August onwards, when you're starting to flower or set pods, you want to be in there possibly a little bit more often if you can, just keeping an eye on insect levels, prey and predator, just tracking your beneficials as well. Checking for disease in wet years, like with your chickpeas especially, you got to be in there nearly before and after every bloody rainfall event. And then same kind of goes with summer crops, mung beans, corn, cotton, sorghum, like, you get that pest load later in the year. So there is times of the year where you want to be in the paddock twice a week if you can. But there's times, like, you know, kind of just before or after a lot of that in-crop spray or fertilizer application or over fallow, where you don't need to be in there every week, let alone twice a week. It's good to be keeping eyes on as often as you can, but it doesn't mean it's the same all year round.
Yeah, absolutely. So is this twice a week? Is this yourself as an agronomist checking it, or is this the farmer getting in there, giving you a bit of an update?
It's a vary sometimes. Like, you know, I'll always try to be in those peak parts of the year in there once a week, and often I do rely on them for a second time, or, if you know, depending on the location, if it's convenient, I'm in the area, I can do that too. Certainly, yeah, once a week I'll be in there at those peak periods. Most of those guys are gonna, you know, with a bit of guidance, they know what they're looking at too. So
yeah, absolutely, it just relies on their experience in there. How do you deal with having the older farmers in there and then you being a young fella coming on? Are they willing to take on your expertise and take a new route?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I guess that's why I do the agronomy, being a younger bloke and being private. So they're paying me on a whatever rate, like rather than just having it through a reseller. So yeah, I think the kind of farmer that takes someone like that to do their agronomy work, it's because they're willing to listen and learn and do things different. And I think that's one of the best things about the job actually, is the kind of person you get to deal with. Like all my clients have become pretty good friends and they're all exceptional operators too. So I really enjoy that interaction. It's very rewarding and I learn plenty too. Like if I go out and farm with one of them, we drive around half a day. If I haven't learned something by the end of it, I'd be surprised every time. So it's a very good relationship. And there is the stigmatism and the stereotype with older farmers, you know, and there's plenty of it around too. But I guess I've been lucky enough that most of my guys are quite forward thinking and I'm willing to learn and listen.
Yeah, excellent. I think that's a bit of a hidden benefit for yourself going private, agronomy side of it. So for your farmers, what does their cropping sort of program look like for 2021? Did it impact like straight after the drought, the varieties that they were going for or what you recommended?
No, I mean, coming out last year, 2020, we kind of had no ground cover. So it was a pretty big emphasis on getting our cereals back in. There was areas of canola still. It's a bit of a staple in our rotation. So speaking from a personal experience there, like we prioritised getting ground cover because we've been kind of 3 years without anything.
Yeah.
So some of our paddocks have copped a bit of erosion, unfortunately, like, you know, just as much due to the weather as it was to management. We, you know, it was nothing we could really do. So this year, obviously, canola was always going to be, before the prices really got crazy, it was a big part of our rotation. You know, having a pretty big cereal rotation last year, we wanted to really start the rotation progressing, I guess, and start to vary. And so it was already a pretty big part of our, most of our rotations heading into this year. But, you know, there was the odd extra hectare added coming up to planting when the price was starting to get towards $700. So, it's probably been a pretty good year for it, really. I think the cereals could be a sneaky high earner too, though. There's some pretty promising wheat out there.
Yeah, 100%. And I have seen that canola was taking off and a few people, there was a few over WA getting a bit more in as well. Why was a canola a good bet even before the price rise? Is it adding more nutrients into the soil for your rotation?
Yeah, well, it's a different root system, I guess, when you say that. Been a big taproot, but it's a fantastic part of our rotation. Like even in a, you know, if you took our average yield and you said it was somewhere between 1.75 tons of the hectare and we're averaging 550, long term it's actually quite a good part of our rotation. Like it is a break crop traditionally, but it's actually quite a profitable one for us. Like often our best earner, I would like to think in the last few years, our average yield has been pushing up a bit more every year, getting closer to 1.75 to a little bit above that.
Yeah.
So it is something we do have a pretty good run with in our area. Strong price traditionally. Get it in early on a full profile, being a bit more of a summer dominant rainfall area, and we can generally push out some kind of yield that's not too bad. And then you put in all the attributes that you want in the break crop, like, taproot, herbicide mix and rotate, things like that. It is, quite good. And there is a saying that every wheat crop's better after canola. So, all part of it. Not to the extent we expect after fava beans or chickpeas, but it is a very good part of our rotation.
Yeah, unreal. This is all new to me. I didn't pick agro as my major at uni. So it's good to hear all about it. For your region around Gunnedah, Moree, wherever your clients may be, what's the biggest challenges coming off the 4 years of drought? A pretty decent year last year and moving into this year. It's been pretty wet, hasn't it?
Yeah, look, every year has unique challenges. This year it's certainly been, and summer crop before, certainly been excess moisture. Start of the year we sprayed out sorghum and then couldn't get a header on the paddock for 8 weeks after 250 mils and took a bit of a hit there. And then there's been issues throughout the year, like just getting our operations done timely. Like we all managed to get our sowing done quite well, except for a few guys who missed a large portion of their winter crop, just simply too wet. And then even for us that did get most of our rotation, our crop in, you know, we had issues like getting spraying, in-crop spraying or spreading fertilizer. Like my brother Matt and I spent a lot of hours in a tractor bog this year trying to get those simple jobs done. We've ended up using the plane a hell of a lot more than I've ever had before. Just getting
even on your home spraying block.
Yeah, we've probably, like myself, I've had the plane out four times between desiccating summer crop and three times in crop. So it's just been one of those years, and there's plenty of challenges that go along with that, just the wet winter, you know, and there could be some to come if this rain keeps up with wet harvest as well. So fingers crossed we dodge it. But not only that, we've had pretty high aphid numbers and heliothis numbers. We've been all right for rust and things like that this year, and disease in general, but last year we did have issues, but definitely a lot of insect pressure this year. And then over last summer, obviously the mice were a fair issue. But every year's got its issues, and a wet one's not any different.
Yeah, well, we had that mice plague coming down. They were speaking about a bit of a rebound there in the north. You're a bit more north of me. What's the mice plague doing up your way or even further north?
No, look, I'm honestly shocked that we haven't had a really big outbreak again, because the numbers, you know, died off pretty hard going into winter, but there was still a bit of activity around the sheds or under timber. And I really thought with the conditions being so favourable that we would see some pretty good numbers. But, you know, we have we've seen the odd mouse, but certainly no near threshold. So that's been a really pleasant surprise. Definitely one I wasn't expecting, but, you know, it's been quite wet the last two or three weeks now. So, I mean, that's probably going to keep any numbers at bay, and we might just sail through summer without, you know, touch wood, too many issues.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just cleaning out our header and we had rats infested right through it into the aircon. And also they got into the tubing in the engine, into the cooler as well. So hopefully they don't come back and wreak havoc like they did before. But for farmers, how can farmers better work with agros to improve efficiencies, productivity of our lands? You said like there's a... For the older farmers working with them, it has its benefits, but it also has those times where they probably think they know more information. How can you see, like, from your point of view and as an agro, how farmers could work better with yourself, not just your clients, but throughout Australia?
I honestly think just ask more questions, to be honest, and involve them as much as you can in the planning and decision-making process.
Yeah.
Like, not to say the agro is right, but the more people you've got working on something, or the, you know, the more input you can get, you're always going to make a better decision when you've got more information. And a lot of the time the agro, you know, it's just nuances that sometimes they might pick up on as well. So whether that's, you know, crop rotation planning, even things like marketing and, header setup, you know, quite a lot of agros work as farmers as well. So it's just a bit of information sharing and, you know, trying to get them as involved in the operation as you can. I mean, the other big thing for where an agro probably comes in is just trying to, you know, to stay on top of all new information and things like that, which, you know, now that I do a bit of both farming and agronomy, I can understand for farmers, it's quite easy to slip over and not keep up to date with everything. So that can be its own challenge too. So they're probably two big things where I think farmers can really take more advantage than probably a lot already do.
Yeah.
With better utilizing their agro.
Yeah. Going back to that one of like the key trends, how like varieties pop up everywhere, here, there, everywhere. How do you, like, what resource do you go to be able to find out the latest information as an agro? Is there one?
Yeah. GRDC's got a fair bit of work out there. So the NVT online is a fantastic resource. And if you haven't looked into it, you probably should. Just, you know, it's just a varietal comparison a lot of the time at all different sites over multi-year. So it gives you quite a lot of information. You know, that site might not be right near you, but, you know, for Gunnedah, there's one in every direction, and the same for Narrabri. So it's quite a lot of information you can take on board, and that's wheat, barley, canola, favours, sorghum. It's, you know, quite diverse too. I mean, we didn't get much data that was of any use in the drought. But, you know, there's a lot of the resources, a lot of, you know, a lot of the reps from seed companies are quite helpful too. And I find them, they have quite a good take on it. You know, looking at crops in general is a good way just to see what works for your environment. I think a lot of our varieties do take a little bit of figuring out how they fit best into your rotation. Certainly with things like canola, with, you know, a new commercial line released every year that's suitable for our district, and essentially, sometimes it's just check the NVT, check the blackleg rating or whatever it may be and put it into the program. Whereas some of our cereals, you know, we can kind of find something that suits our system a little bit better and we tend to stick with it. A lot of us grow, for example, Lancer variety wheat. I don't know how old it'd be, probably 10 years old now. But for us, it's still an exceptional variety. Like, might be a little bit of a yield penalty behind some of the newer stuff released in the last 2 or 3 years. And we are looking elsewhere. But, you know, for us, it works well with the sowing window being versatile, grain quality, disease resistance, things like that. And we're familiar with it too. We know how it behaves with the hot finish, or we like the growth habit of it as well. So I think, you know, it's taking on resources, but seeing how things work in the field too.
Yeah, definitely. It's that mixture and finding the key mix that works really well. You may drop a tiny percentage of your yield, but that comes into weed resistant, pest resistant, and can probably, those elements are probably going to save the farmer a little bit more money and even time. For yourself, as you carry out your day as an agro, both home and with your clients, what sort of technology, if any at all, do you use?
I've got an iPad and a phone, and you kind of run a business through them now. But in the agronomy terms, a lot of it's through software. Like, AgWorld is constantly open. It's just what I use for doing all my agronomy work. It's great. I've got, I think, 7 years of data on there now. So, you know, it's a pretty handy tool to have. Do use quite a bit of NDVI imagery. It's just a really good ground truthing tool.
Yeah.
So it just gives you the green leaf area, or the amount of green leaf area, essentially, like in a density, if you think of it that way. It's great for getting a bit of idea of what's happening in the crop with maturity, density, plant density, everything like that, just even crop health. I do use a drone. It's not the handiest thing, but with a big canola area this year, I've been able to get over a bit. You know, I'm not that keen on walking a kilometre up a row with heavy flowering canola. So just as a visual aid, it can be handy. I mean, it's limited in what it can do. But that's something I do use a bit of as well. It's things like weather stations, pretty straightforward and I think widely used now. There's not a hell of a lot that goes into, you know, not a hell of a lot yet. There's still more resources we could be using, but if you're looking at the farming side, I think that's where a lot of the PA stuff's coming in or has been used for a few years now, things like PA. It works very great stuff. I can do a little bit of that, but it's definitely not my forte with your variable rate maps.
Yeah, I think for the sector, it sort of rings true, the same sort of, everyone's sort of similar to what you are. It's traditional sort of digital assets that everyone's using. But it's interesting, like the ag world, are you using it with your clients and you can sort of be updated live to what the client's crops are doing and how they're all going?
No. More like sending, you know, spray recos for recos, things like that. I mean, it's other handy features. It's got one of the many NDVI setups in it through Satamap, I think. And even just, you know, it's got a library of all your labels and MSDSs and OSDSs and things like that. It's just a really good database for a lot of decisions you make as well. And like logging, you know, you can put your soil tests in there for record keeping, your pests you observed, what dates you did things, what fertilizer history it was. It's just a good decision-making tool through compiling a lot of information, I guess. And it makes it a hell of a lot easier.
Does it save, what's the best about it? It saves the time, like actually physically talking to the farmer or saving the...
Oh, look, you're still right there and talking to him, but it's like, you know, it's instead of writing something down on a piece of paper and passing it to them to be lost, you know, you've got a digital copy. Your echoes can be text or email to them. You know, it's just a little, does a lot of that for you. You know, doesn't allow for those lost papers or, you know, things like that. It's really, really helpful. I dare say, like, if it's not AgWorld, I think probably the most popular one, a lot of all agros probably now are using some similar platform, Cirrus or I think Back Paddock or something like that. I think most people are using something like that now.
Yeah, I think that's so too. I've actually got the CEO of AgWorld coming up in November or December. I just got to time it when pretty jam-packed at the moment. But yeah, I think those sort of platforms, they're filtering through here, there and everywhere and just trying to see where they fit and who can best use them. Within agriculture, it's not just as simple as downloading an app, what it would be in any other industry. You sort of have to like the user has to know how to use it and be familiar with it before adopting that tech, wouldn't you say, for the farmers especially? Yeah,
some, you know, there is that older generation farmers who are pretty computer illiterate, but it's more so, you know, knowing what you're doing to be able to use the app.
Yeah.
I think having an understand of why you're making what decision. I think it's quite widely spread. Most people probably got their heads around it now. I don't think it's anything too new, but it's been, I mean, I remember when I started using it and no one in the company I was working for was, and it was kind of, they had a different program and it was quite different and good then, but that was a little while ago now, and it did make a, you know, noticeable improvement. It's almost like a mod con kind of thing, you know.
Yeah,
just made everything a little bit easier and a little bit better.
Yeah, and as time goes on, you said that you had it for 7 or 9 years, I think. And yeah, as you compound that data, that's like you're really going to start to see the trends, especially once you got over 5 years, you can see what the connecting sort of years have, if you haven't good years, shit years sort of thing. So that's good to see that you're using a bit of tech out there.
Yeah, I think most farms now use quite a bit these days, especially grain growing properties in particular. I think there's a much wider and more broad uptake of ag tech. But yeah, most properties now relying on some, and even, you know, if it's not yourself, you know, you're paying a contractor with a weeded or a weed seeker to come in and do spraying for you over summer. You know, there's quite a, you know, vast array, and some of it's very impressive, the amount of offer and the amount used now.
Yeah, the amount of money that you can spend on new equipment, like those weed seekers, there's a bit of money there, but there's definitely the benefits after purchasing that new equipment. For this year, and I suppose last year, the COVID pandemic, how has it affected agronomy as such? Has it affected you or your clients?
I mean, the supply chain there's fairly big issues there.
For all your inputs?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking $1,000 for urea now, and historically we've got it on farm for under 500 normally. So there's that kind of thing, very little control over that. On the flip side, though, our output prices, our grain or our livestock prices are, you know, the amount in the system are record highs. You know, canola 1,000, selling steers for 2,500. It's, you know, even wheat at 320 for protein's fantastic. So, you know, that kind of softens the blow of paying so much more for your Roundup or your seed or whatever you might be. The day-to-day stuff's not been a hell of a lot different, like not getting that face-to-face contact, but being an essential worker, and you are out on farm fairly often. Normally it's just doing a lot of solo work now. Can make some more boring days. But, yeah, it hasn't changed it a hell of a lot. You know, apart from, you know, no more than regular day life, you know, living in the country, we've been relatively unaffected, particularly here, unlike you around Dubbo. But it's not made the biggest difference, to be honest. Not in like what I do day to day, at least.
Yeah. Well, people do have to eat. So it's good for agriculture that we can still continue. Bit unlucky being in Dubbo at the moment, but that's what it is. And well, the benefit of that is, this year's been unreal for livestock and also cropping. Let's just hope we can get those crops off nice and safe and they don't fall over with these rains coming along. So within this harvest, what's your role going to be? Are you working on
No, I'll do that mainly. Like once we kind of get to harvest, it's, you know, we kind of I'll go back to the property basically every day. Most other guys, well, most of my clients will run their own harvest. I'm sure I'll be talking to them a lot during it. My job on the farm in harvest is normally a shit kicker. I normally have to stack the bunkers and run trucks and things like that. Dad and I spend a bit of time with Chase. Have been Dad and my younger brother, Matt, normally running the headers.
Yep.
And we've got a couple of workers that help out with the maintenance too. But normally I'm left in charge of, the really shitty jobs. So someone's got to do them. It's okay with me. I'm just glad that they get done, to be honest. Wouldn't mind not having to stack itchy barley in a hot day sometimes, but it is what it is.
100%. Well, that's what all encompasses working on a family farm. Someone's got to do that job, and it may as well be you picking it up. But working on the family farm, what sort of goals are you setting over the next 5-10 years, or even for your career, Rich, for agronomy, or both at home as well?
I guess looking family farm, we're trying to reach a point where we've got a really good balance between the farming and the livestock. You know, where, for example, 30% of our income comes from farming and therefore it's 30% of the work. It's probably a little bit skewed at the moment. Seeing we've, you know, been pushing into that diversification into that in particular over the last few years. So by sowing next year, we'll be on a fully controlled traffic system, 3-meter wheel tracks. So that'll make a bit of a difference, a bit of earthworks happening over summer, just repairing some rollover contours. And I think that'll make a big difference, just picking up some efficiencies in paddocks. Keep continuing to develop the herd. We've done a large portion of improving our pastures already. So, you know, maintaining that and possibly improving it, continuing to improve it is a big thing too. I think we're quite interested in the idea of running a feedlot on farm too, a bit of integration of grain into our livestock there, and gives us the potential to trade in and out depending on the season. That's probably the farm at home. For the agronomy company, I'd just like to keep ticking away doing what I'm doing. I'll never say no to more work until I can't. But continue to grow the business and keep hopefully getting good results. And then, yeah, share farm myself, only cropping though.
Yep.
So, yeah, I guess make a bit of money, pay down a bit of debt, and hopefully buy a bit more land along those lines over the next few years. But it's pretty hard to come by.
That's the goal. Well, you better hurry up before it's just absolutely unreachable. Land prices going through the roof. And something I'm trying to get onto podcasts, the people listening to the podcast is optimizing the farms. And agronomists out there are probably the best optimizers for getting the best out of the soil in their cropping program. So that's pretty cool to have you on the show, mate. Thanks very much for coming on. For anyone out there looking to get into agronomy, or they're a young starter, what's the best way to get into it? Should we join a bigger agronomy company, or how should we go about it? Or if you're looking to get some education?
I think they're pretty desperate for agronomists anywhere of any kind of experience at the moment, but I think it's just got to start somewhere. And I was always told by one of the older agronomists when I first started, just try to be like a sponge and soak it all in. So much stuff gets thrown at you when you first start, but I think just trying to learn from as many smart people as you can, take advice from everyone, take criticism from everyone, and learn from it. I think, to be honest, there's good agronomists working privately and there's really good agronomists that work for companies too. So it doesn't matter where you are. Like you're more than likely going to have someone within your organization that you can learn from. So for young agros, just take it all in. And that's probably the biggest word of advice for them, I would have thought.
Absolutely. I think it's pretty good advice as well, just to pass that on for anyone listening to the show, or share the show for Rich's Farms Advice as well. Well, mate, thanks for coming on to the Farms Advice podcast and giving us your expertise for the Harvest series. Who else would you like to hear on the Farms Advice podcast and why?
I think last time we tried to record this, I couldn't think of anyone for the life of me, but I've had the thought about it this time, and I reckon Bob Freeburn would be a fantastic guest.
Absolutely. I think I wrote his name down, but I'll have to get him on and have a pasture topic for sure. But nonetheless, mate, if anyone wants to get in touch with the huge Avendano Agronomy and yourself, or even just learn a little bit from asking you a question, how can we do that online, social?
I've got a Facebook page for my business. It's just Avendano Agronomics. It's nothing special. Not as active as I should be, just a bit busy. And Twitter profile, the handle's Avin Agro, AGRO. Also not that active, but I will reply to messages and post some insights when I do have time. Or you can call me or message me. I don't care what service, to be honest. Try to be active on social media, but it kind of slips down the job list.
Yeah, 100%. The priority is the farm. It gets hard for myself trying to push everything out, working on farm as well. But it'll all be in the show notes, so you can find it all there. Rich, mate, thanks for coming on the show and being a part of the Harvest series.
No, thank you very much for having me, and keep going with the podcast. It's amazing to see how it's grown.
Absolutely. Cheers, mate. That's it for this episode. Thanks for tuning in to Rich and myself talk all things agronomy and how pre-planning to harvest time an agronomist has impact on the crops throughout Australia. That's within the Harvest series. We've had four cracking episodes. So if you have liked these episodes, please share it on your social media so we can continue to spread the farm's voice, so we can improve farms right across Australia and just make that impact as well. If we can improve one person or give a key takeaway to just one person, then we've done our job. We'll see you on Friday for another cracking Harvest episode. Keep on farming. G'day farmers, thanks for listening right to the end of this episode. If you'd like to win a Farms Advice hat, the very first one out of the box, make sure you head over to our Instagram to be in the chance to win the Farms Advice cap. See you next time.